You are now listening to Chat with Betty, the podcast, your number one spot for all things boss babes. From inspiration to wellness and some candid moments with Betty Golko, your host. Stay tuned and get ready to chat.
I think confidence is knowing that you can make the bold claims, but also deliver on those promises. And for most people, they like to make bold claims, but they don't deliver the results. Therefore, it's fake confidence or it's not real confidence. So certainty, I think when you can be certain, people enjoy that. I think that a lot of times leadership and the lessons I've learned from the greatest leaders, they were the ones that were decisive. You know, confidence is making a decision and rolling with it, understanding that no decision is final. It just leads to further decisions. So it's okay to be certain based on your knowledge, your experience, the data, things that you understand. Make a decision, quit being hesitant, quit thinking about, oh, let's reschedule this for another meeting to make a decision about this other decision. Like, make a decision based on what you know today, go down that road. If something changes or there's a new revelation, new discovery, new data, you just have a different decision to make at that point.
Welcome to Chat with Betty, the podcast. I am so excited for today's episode because we have an incredible, incredible businessman, Tony Whatley. He is an entrepreneur. He is a podcaster, a speaker, a business coach, an author. I mean, he has a history in automobiles. Like, this man just does it all. What don't you do, Tony?
I haven't done skydiving yet, but it's still on the list.
Still on the list. See? He's invincible. He'll try anything. Oh my gosh. Welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Well, thank you. And I look forward to this opportunity to chat with Betty because that sounds pretty fun to me.
It's so fun. We're just going to hang out and let's just let the people know all the amazing things about you. Talk to us about what's your upbringing, where did you grow up, and how did life look like from a young Tony?
I think that, yeah, to put things into context, I grew up, I would say, lower middle class as a suburb of Houston. Small town when I was there, it was probably about 15,000 total people. High school had about 1,000 total kids in it. So medium-sized small town. Football town, obviously in Friendswood and being in Texas. So you know, when I watched the movie Friday Night Lights, that's a pretty accurate depiction of my old town. Nice. And I remember playing football there and we had the perks of being a player because you could put the number on your back of your car because that was just cool to do. But and barbers would cut your hair for discounts and local owned hamburger places would give you discounts if you're a player. So I grew up in that kind of a Americana. You know, but the thing is that I guess a little bit different was that I'm half Japanese. Oh. And so I also got to experience a little bit of racism when I was younger, where, you know, most of the teachers and authority and police were World War II era, you know, adults. Mm-hmm. And they didn't really have a lot of tolerance or acceptance of anyone that was Japanese, even if I didn't always look it.
Right.
They knew who your mother was being a small town. So, you know, I got to experience a little bit of that. And I understand that most of my life was trying to fit in, trying to not stick my head out. Even though I knew I could have a lot more potential to do things bigger, mm-hmm. I just learned to try to blend in and not try to get ostracized or criticized because, you know, I had childhood bullies like most people. You either were the bully or you had bullies. There's only like two camps there. And I just learned to just try to not do things to really stand out. And even though in my own way, I was always doing things for myself to stand out, I just realized I got passed up on a lot of opportunities for leadership and things like that. Both parents really hardworking. My mom worked in public school system as a cafeteria worker her whole career. My dad was a U.S. Marine. And when he got out of the Vietnam War, he worked in the chemical refineries here in Houston. So I got to see them work extremely hard and realize that anything that I have, I had to have a lot of appreciation for. But also if I wanted more, I had to go figure out how to get that because we didn't have the financial means to go do that kind of stuff. And that made me a kid hustler, you know, what we call as a kidpreneur nowadays, but I didn't think of it as being a business owner. I thought about it as just, hey, how am I going to get that new skateboard? How am I going to get that new bicycle? And if that meant pushing the lawnmower around and knocking on doors and getting turned down 100 times to get a few yards to mow or washing cars or walking dogs or buying candy at the local 7-Eleven in a box and selling it at school to try to make double the profit, that's just what I did, but that was more of a means to get things rather than thinking of it as a business. So, but I've always had that instilled in me. I didn't sit around and just wait for things.
Wow. That's amazing. That's amazing. And you know, what's so funny is because I'm from Memphis and as you know, it's like a very similar idea, this out of town kind of mentality, really kind of the community, everybody knows each other for better or for worse. I'm also Jewish, so I can relate to that perspective. So we have a lot in common. You'd be surprised. Right? You never know.
You never know. You really don't. Yeah, it's crazy.
So you at a young age just had this kind of, perhaps it came from a different place or a different necessity, if you would, but you had this idea in your mind, which taught you kind of this idea of how to put yourself out there and get things that you needed to provide for yourself and perhaps your family. So that kind of set yourself up in many ways for where life took you, right?
Yeah, and I think also, as a child and even as an adult, I've always been somewhat of a daredevil and a stunt person. I used to think about, like, when you were asking me as a kid what I wanted to be when I grew up, it was either a fighter pilot, a race car driver, or a stuntman. And so I was a skateboarder and did BMX, and I used to ride my skateboard off of the roof of the garage onto the driveway and skateboard in pools. I did all kinds of things. I probably should have died 100 times, to be honest. I probably banged my head a bunch of times. So I only imagine how intelligent I could have been had I not banged my head so much. I kind of wonder if there's like, if I'm missing a few things, but I've always been willing to put myself in harm's way and take risks. And the thrill, the excitement, the adrenaline, not necessarily to do it in front of other people, but just to me, it's like, that's how I feel alive. You know, when you're really close to death, I feel really most alive. And I've always been that way. And even in racing cars, you know, I've driven over 200 miles per hour and I've got cars with over 1,000 horsepower. And it's just who I am. And I've always been that way. But I think that that risk tolerance has also made me a better entrepreneur, because I can look at it and go, I'm not going to die doing that. So why not try it out?
Wow. Yeah, I love that. That's a really necessity in terms of mindset for an entrepreneur and anyone who wants to develop themselves in business. But what I found so interesting is, one, your persona in terms of how you speak and how you come across. One would never guess that you're that much of a daredevil. Like, you certainly don't give off that vibe of like, I'm ready to just jump off the roof and skydive. But that's, I'm sure your parents love that.
Yeah, after I broke my wrist in eighth grade, my dad actually took away my skateboard because he didn't want to pay the insurance deductibles for me breaking myself continually. So to get back at him, I started playing Texas football in high school. So it's kind of like one or the other. I guess I've always had a tendency to try to look for combative things or contact sports or just ways to be aggressive, because I think I had a lot of that built up into me as a child, and maybe being bullied and things like that. And I was always looking for outlets for that. And I did martial arts, and I was always that kind of personality. But here's the thing that you mentioned, that because I'm very self-aware and I'm very calm personality wise. But that was also because I learned self-awareness of emotion. And the funny thing about that, you talk about like going back, and I remember learning judo, right? I took judo because I wanted to kick people's ass. Like, I was tired of being bullied and I just wanted to be able to hit back. And I remember my mom signing me up for this, and I was probably sixth, seventh grade time frame, right? And I was ready to put on my gi and my white belt, and I go to the class, and I'm ready to learn how to punch and kick because I was tired of getting picked on. And the first month and a half, we didn't learn any striking. All I got taught was how to get thrown around and tossed by the people who had been in the class longer. And I was like, well, when am I going to learn how to hit? And the sensei was like, you need to learn how to fall. You need how to roll out of this. You need to learn how to not get injured when you do get thrown. We'll get to striking, you know, once you've mastered these things. And I was like, this is a bunch of BS. You know, this is not what I signed up for. But what that taught me was having self-awareness of an emotion. Because when you're getting tossed around like a ragdoll, literally like having to be a dummy, it kind of makes you mad at first because you're just being like tossed around. And then you realize like there's a technique to this. I can roll out of this. I can maintain my composure. And then you start to think about you're watching the people who are black belts, and they're sparring against each other, and they're very calm. Like, you would think like in the movies, like anytime you're seeing karate, like people are like Bruce Lee and like making noises and going all crazy. And I looked at the highest level of combat sports, even in UFC and things like you watch nowadays, they may be all antics when they're walking to the ring and their music's playing, and they may be dancing or making weird faces. But as soon as that bell rings and it starts, you watch, they're very calm. Mm-hmm. And they're reading their opponent, and they're trying to be really focused on things. And what you can learn from that is that your emotion gets in the way a lot of times. And a lot of people overreact, and they're crazy with their emotions, but they're losing self-control. Mm-hmm. And another example of that is like when people are road raging, like they're driving a car and somebody cuts you off and you're like, you start screaming obscenities and you're on the horn and you're shooting the bird and the person that you're cutting on doesn't even know you're doing all that. You're doing that to yourself. You're looking at a windshield. They can't hear you. They can't see you. They obviously didn't see if they cut in front of you, right? But you're like letting them ruin your day. You're letting your emotional state ruin your day. And you'll show up to work or a meeting or your next call and you're just already in the sour mood because of some person that was oblivious to you, was probably singing, looking at their phone, having a great day, just ruined yours because you allowed it. See, so I try to be really self-aware on emotion and go, does this really serve me to like be in this moment? Does being angry at something that's not going to change the outcome, that really serve me? And when people started to notice that about me, I started thinking, well, where did I learn this? And that's how I was able to trace it all the way back to martial arts. I'm like, that's what they taught us. And it's weird how something that long ago can stick.
Wow, that's incredible. And I really respect that because as a mother, I value that. And I think that it's so important for every one of us to realize that, just as you said, even at such a young age, things have an impact on us for the rest of our lives. And it could be something that's helpful or unfortunately, you know, challenging as we move forward. So I love how martial arts and the act of participating in that allowed you to bring focus into your life. And I'm sure that was a huge component. And that's an important thing to do in all areas of our lives, but certainly within business, right? Especially an entrepreneur, as you're dealing with new people all the time, new ideas, and perhaps people that you don't necessarily get along with or mesh well with, who are maybe telling you things you don't really want to hear, but you have to be able to stay within in order to handle it the best way that's going to serve you ultimately. So I'd love to tap into that in terms of your first business and then how you shifted out of that into the next one. And then of course, I cannot wait to hear more about your book because that's really you. It embodies you. So that's really exciting.
Yeah, the beginning thing. Wow. I grew up thinking that this phrase is truth. The phrase is time is money. We've all heard that phrase. We probably repeated. I'm sure your viewers or listeners have heard that many times. And we believe it because we've heard it since we were knee high. And when your authority and your parents and your teachers and your supervisors later in life are all telling you time is money, money is time, time is money, money is time. If you want to make more money, you got to trade more time. So you just start thinking, okay, I don't have enough money right now. So maybe I need to pick up extra shifts. Maybe I need to work overtime. Maybe I need to get a second job or a third job. I've worked three jobs before. So you're always looking for units of time to trade for units of dollars. And that's how I was raised. That's how my parents made their money. And I didn't have any other way to not believe that. But then I started building a business. I was like, okay, well, I'm not making enough money. I would get home. Here's how weird it is, okay? Because I was working construction at 18. And I'm working in the chemical refineries, just like my dad. I'm going to engineering school. I'm paying for that myself. I'm going to school at night. It took me 7 years. And that was like my hustle and grind 24/7 phase of my life. That 7 years where I was working full-time outside, going to school at night, sleeping like 3 or 4 hours maximum per night because I had all this homework to do. Right. And then I would go wait tables on the weekends just to make more money to be able to pay all that off. And I just thought that's what you do. Like if you wanted more money, you're not happy, go get another job. Go get a raise. And working construction, even in that setting, I remember looking at all the older guys that were like in their 40s, 50s, you know, closer to my age now, they would brag about how much overtime they were working. Like, oh man, I worked so much overtime last week. Like they wore it as a badge of honor. They're just bragging about overtime. And so again, you're still being reinforced by time is money. I need to make more hours. If I want to be measured as a man, I need to work a lot of hours. And all these weird things that you believe mm-hmm. when you come up as a young adult. And so when I get out of school, I got an entry-level engineering job and I was getting home at like 4:30 in the afternoon because we started earlier. I was like, well, what do I do now? Do I just go to the bars? Do I sit around? Do I watch TV like everybody else? What do I do? And I did that for maybe a couple of months. I was going to the bars. We'd find a happy hour Wednesday through Sunday because you took Mondays and Tuesdays off to do laundry or whatever. Go grocery shopping, go do laundry, right? And I was like, this isn't really working out. This is not where I want to be. You know, I'm making at that time, probably $45,000 a year. I said, well, why don't I go back to the restaurant that I was previously a waiter and a manager at and just pick up extra shifts? It's like, okay, that's how I'll do that. So I would get home and I'd change clothes, put my apron on, and I'd go back to the restaurant that I was working at when I was in school. And I would pick up extra shifts and I'd make $100, $120 a night. And I did that. So I was, here I am with an engineering degree, an engineering career, you know, big boy salary, still waiting tables every night because I didn't care what people thought. And other waiters would be like, man, you got a career, you got an engineering career, and you've got, you know, you're making money and you got your degree. Why are you still waiting tables? It's like, because I'm not where I want to be. And I'm willing to go do what it takes to get what I want. And people always thought that was weird. But when you grow up without money, you're like, dude, I'm just going to do whatever. I don't care what you think. I'm just going to go do that. So even then you're working in the restaurants and you're seeing that people still think that there's this limit, like you've got a degree and you've got an engineering job. Like you're supposed to be like happy. That's where you stop. And I was like, that doesn't make any sense to me. It never made any sense. So I started thinking about, okay, how can I make money like without having to wait tables? And my first business was I would build these little electronic circuits to make cars go faster, but I'd have to go to Radio Shack back when they were in business and buy these resistors and wires and design it. And I'd sit at my little kitchen table in the apartment and I'd hand build these things after work every day. And I could make $40 a piece, but they would take three, you know, an hour to build each one. So I'd make 120 again. They're at the same dollar value, but I didn't have to put an apron on. So I was really just replacing that income when you think of it that way. Right. And that's just kind of what I did. And I realized like, dude, this isn't scaling. I can only make three a night just time-wise. And yeah, the money's not good. It pays for my bar tab on the weekends, but it's like, this isn't really a business. It doesn't grow. And about that kind of stuff. And then I started building websites. I taught myself how to build a website to be able to advertise those. So I bought a book and I'd practice and I just build websites. And then other people were like, hey, can you build me one? I was like, yeah, it's $300. I'd go build them a web page. So that was like one of my first side hustles.
Nice.
I was like, dude, I can make a lot more money building websites than I can building these circuits, right? Because I got really good at it. And then you start to realize like, man, I could sell things on websites and make money while I'm asleep. And it's like the whole time and money thing started to really dissolve at that point. And I was like, wow. I'd wake up and I'd see my PayPal account, like someone bought $600 worth of stuff. And I was like, I was asleep. I made $600. Like that was like,
mind blowing.
Time is not equal to money. Time is no longer equal to money. And most people, unfortunately, will never realize that.
So interesting. So it sounds like it was really just a natural transition of things that just happened on its own, really. And you kind of had this viewpoint and mindset, which is one of, hey, I'm okay with who I am. I know what I need to do and where I need to be. And I'm not going to just stop and be satisfied, even though it was hammered into my head all along. And that's one really unique, which I think is why perhaps you were able to stand out in the crowd, so to speak, of this type of, you know, culture we live in. And that's, I think, why I resonated with you so much, because I feel very similar. And as a psychology background, and I pursued my second master's, and I was doing all of these things. And very often, if not continuously, even to this day, I get this runny reaction and facial expression. Oh, and you went into fashion? Oh, that's funny. Like, what do you mean? And I'm like, yeah, listen, it was definitely a challenge in the beginning in terms of finances. But at the end of the day, ultimately, if you aren't living for yourself in your heart and your soul and whatever is calling to you, you're going to be miserable. And I just feel like life is short. And don't get me wrong, things are not perfect and they never will be perfect, whatever that means. I mean, I'm always shifting. And I think that's also kind of what the word resilient means, right? That we are able to be flexible and go with the flow and perhaps not be at our best yet, but know and have a belief system in ourselves that we will get there and it's going to happen as long as we just stick to it. So that's what I'm hearing from you. Is that what you feel?
Oh, absolutely. I love that you gave that example for yourself as well, because you and I both know a lot of people who are they're unhappy doing what they do. They're just unhappy. Yeah. They tell you, I'm unhappy doing it. I can't figure it out. I don't know what's going on. And one of the questions I always ask them is, what did you want to be when you grew up? When you were a kid, like, what did you want to be when you grew up? And you'll find very, very few that will say, I wanted to be a lawyer. I wanted to be a psychologist. I wanted to be it's like these careers that we pursue. A lot of times, unfortunately, we find that those are the dreams of our parents or our teachers that influenced this. Those weren't our dreams. They told me to go be an engineer, because if you want to make $100,000, you got three choices. You could be a doctor, a lawyer, or an engineer. I was like, wow, I want to make $100,000 someday, but I don't want to be a lawyer, and I don't like blood and guts and sick people, so I don't want to be a doctor. So I guess I have to be an engineer. Right? I was average at math and I became a mechanical engineer.
Oh, that's funny.
I had to really catch up. I had to study really hard to catch up. But it wasn't who I am. I'm grateful that I had that education because I understand a lot about processes and systems and how things work and how the world works. I love physics, but we pursue careers that are not necessarily our dreams. But here's the other problem with that, okay? Because while you and I both think that you should pursue your passions, a lot of people know that their passions aren't available at this time, so they give up. So you heard me, I'm working about 3 jobs and waiting tables and all this stuff while I had a degree. Most people are unwilling to do what it takes to get what they want. So I always think about, you have to be willing to do what needs to be done in order to be able to do what you want to do later. And most people aren't willing to make that sacrifice.
Yes. And I love that you added that because that's a very important point that I want to make it clear. I never, ever want to enforce the idea that, oh, just go do what you love and then be broke and suffer. Because at the end of the day, obviously, we need money in this world to provide for our well-being. So, you know, you have to be smart about it and you have to be exactly what you said. You have to be willing to make certain sacrifices in some other area until perhaps that becomes your main focus. And I'd love to take that and go right into The Side Hustle Millionaire, because that's your book and that really embodies you and what we're talking about. So what do you want to add in terms of your book? Because I think that if someone picks up your book, they're listening and they're thinking, oh my gosh, I resonate. I want to learn. I would love to be in that place. I'm stuck. So they want to get your book. How can they find your book, first of all? And second of all, what would you say while they're listening would be perhaps 1, 2, 3 tips of something they could just start off doing if they want to create this side hustle?
You can find the book on Amazon or at sidehustlebook.net. Pretty easy. It's an Amazon #1 bestseller. We sold over 1,000 copies the first week it came out. Came out just over 3 years ago. I've done a couple updates over the last 3 years, just kind of keep it more relevant. But overall, it's sold thousands of copies. And it's really how to take the ideas that are rattling around in your skull and putting those into actual businesses. Because you and I both know friends, colleagues, people, your parents, family that say, oh, someday I'm going to start a business. I got this idea. So I got, and you know, the water cooler talk at your job. Like people are like, oh man, I got this great idea. They're always talking about business. It's like, I wrote that book for those people because I just want to be able to hand it to them and say, well, get busy.
Oh,
here's how you do it. Quit talking about it. These ideas aren't worthless. Because here's the problem is that most people highly value ideas, but ideas aren't worth a thing unless you put them into action. They're not worth like, thousands and thousands of people die every single day with great ideas that probably could have made them highly successful or impactful in this world, but they never did anything with those ideas. So you can't walk around patting yourself on the back just because you have good ideas. That just means you maybe you're creative,
right?
But it doesn't mean you're an executor. So I said, okay, how do I get them to look at these ideas in a process and weigh those ideas against each other to find out a real simple formula, simple calculations, like some really simple process on how to make the best idea more clear. Here's the idea that we should run with. I got 5 ideas. These are the ones I'm going to measure against each other. This one has better odds of success, meeting my criteria of time goals and financial goals, scalability, things like that. So once we get the idea, it kind of walks you through the whole process of here's how you name it. Here's how you brand it. Here's how you should build a website. Here's how you get funding for it. Here's the marketing ideas and websites and stuff you need to understand before you start to build this. And I also find that a lot of times people have a desire to start a business, mostly because they don't want to be told what to do by their boss or their company. And I get that. We're all like that anyways. But the thing is that most people overvalue their skills or knowledge, but they undervalue business skills and knowledge. So you may be like an exceptional, say like a teacher. Let's say I'm an excellent teacher. I can teach kids and I want to start my own school. Like, great. I love that you're a great teacher and you love the kids. But do you know anything about business, marketing, accounting, legal? Oh, no. It's like, well, your skills and your knowledge that you're coming to the table with are only worth about 50% of your success. So it took you a while to learn that kind of stuff. So why don't we start to also learn your business acumen, your skills, your management, your leadership, your communication, marketing? You may not have to do all those tasks for long, but in any startup, you're probably going to do all of them. And I find that a lot of times people just are really hesitant to try to learn business. It's like, well, if you want this and you say you want this, why aren't you willing to invest that same amount of time or investment in that money to go learn the things that are important for business, to create your own business? Because once you do, you realize like, why didn't I do this sooner?
Yeah, I can imagine that people have a lot of regret later on in life when they've had such a valuable idea in their mind and they just didn't even try. So I love the idea that you created this book to really break down all the components. So anyone at any point in stage and any idea, it's still the core pieces, right? The core steps that anyone should take in all areas.
Yeah. And you're the mindset expert too. So you understand how important that is. The first two chapters of this book are mindset. And well, it's conquering the common excuses. And you know the common excuses why people are like, give me one. Why don't people start their business, Betty?
It's funny you said that because that was what was on the tip of my tongue to ask you. And I was going to say, what would you find is the most common excuse or reason why people don't take the action and the first step towards their idea, their business, or their dream? And so I was going to ask you.
I bet you know what the number one is. So what do you think it is?
I was going to say excuses financially.
Okay. That would be fear of failure based on my survey. Number one is I don't have time.
Time. Okay.
I don't have time. I got kids. I got a spouse. I got a full-time job. I don't have time to start a business. And said, oh, you don't have time. So if you say that to someone like me, who's a coach, you don't have time. I understand that. So are you saying that nobody with children, nobody that's ever been married or in a relationship, or nobody with a full-time job has ever started a business? Well, so you're saying that because you have children, because you're married, you can never be a successful business owner. You start just crushing their excuses right with logic, because the problem is that most people use that I don't have time excuse with their average mediocre friends, right? Hang around with a bunch of people who aspire to be average and they go, hey, Betty, you're so good at this. Why don't you start a business? And you go, oh, I don't have time. Usually that means like the conversation is supposed to stop. Like, don't cross this barrier. You're supposed to just go, oh yeah, I don't have time either. Yeah, I'm super busy myself. But if you hang around people who are performers who challenge you, they'll say, oh, you don't have time, Betty? Show me your calendar. Pull out your phone, show me your calendar. And you go, oh, whoa, calendar? What do you mean calendar? It's like, you don't manage your hours on a daily basis. How do you know which time you have and which time you don't have? Mm-hmm. And that's a tip there. If you're listening and if you're not using your daily calendar, which could be a Gmail app, it's on your phone, everybody's got it, use the calendar. What are you doing every single hour? You and I are on this conversation. We booked this days and days in advance for this day and this time. We knew exactly where we were going to be and how we're going to be present and show up right now. So when you say someone that, hey, I don't have time, and you go, show me your calendar, they look at you with a deer in the headlights like, oh my gosh, nobody's ever carried this conversation further. And if they feel discomfort, they should, because here's how you reframe that. It's not my priority. Mm-hmm. Anything you say you don't have time for, start saying it. It's not my priority. So if you're watching this or listening to this, and let's try it on a different thing. It's like let's say that you're struggling with your health and your fitness. You go, well, I don't have time to go to the gym. No, you don't have a priority for your health and your fitness. Ouch. Like, ooh. And when you start thinking about the things you do, and maybe you're playing Xbox or you're watching Netflix, or think about the things that you're actually doing with that time that you could be starting your business little by little. And if you say, hey, it's my priority to sit on the couch and watch Netflix, that just sounds weird. It sounds really weird, because that's the truth. And if it stings a little bit, maybe you should pay attention to that a little bit more, right? So yeah. Start calling the things you are doing. It's my priority to play Xbox. It's my priority to go hang out at the bars and spend money. It's my priority. It just sounds really weird, because it is, right? So yeah, it's shifting just the little things about how you think about things, how you say things, and actually managing your time, you will find that you are wasting a lot of time. Everybody is. Even multi-millionaires, we have time to waste. So you have time.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I think the bottom line of that message for me is really being honest, really looking and thinking the truth of who you are. And by the way, it's okay if you say, hey, I want to just use my time wasted on playing Netflix, if that's what you want to do.
Schedule it.
You know? Yeah. Hey, cool. But don't tell me the other excuse if that's not the truth. So being honest with yourself, first and foremost, can only lead you towards accomplishing whatever you need to accomplish, because perhaps you didn't think of it that way. And like you said, it can awaken you to realize, oh my gosh, well, I really want that goal, but I'm not willing to stay up past 10 o'clock. So maybe I'm not going to accomplish that goal as quickly as I'd like, which again is okay. But as long as you are assessing yourself in the most realistic, honest way, then you can start to get your side hustle millionaire like Tony and nailing it. Because guys, we all have dreams, right? We all have ideas. And I think that's beautiful. But just as Tony said, that could just be creative, like spunk in you. And maybe you want to be an advisor for others to help them have ideas. But if you have a burning desire in your own heart for something that you know is you, and I could just speak to me, is that, you know, again, I started my business and my industry fairly recently, full time, saying I'm the Glow Up Club and I'm going to be a Glow Up Bestie and this is my business, which has been a dream, that plus writing my book. And I have been holding on to all of these excuses of, oh, I'm too busy, I'm scared, I'm nervous, I don't know what I'm doing, yada, yada, yada. And at the end of the day, little by little, I put my foot in front of the other foot. And I said, let me just start my podcast. Let me just start this. Let me just shift my name. Let me just do that. Until I began to put my own words in my own mouth. And I said, build up your confidence, build it up, and know that if that's your truth, Betty, that's your heart yearning and pulling you to that, which has been for years, then start making it happen. There's no real, at the end of the day, excuse, because again, it's like your mindset. Tony's book, The Side Hustle Millionaire, the first chapters are all about mindset. So guys, it's really everything. It can be challenging at some times, but as long as you keep practicing the mindset that you need, it will become your normal go-to. So Tony, oh my gosh, you're amazing. What other tip do we want to share before we get off? Because I could talk to you all day.
I would say that the biggest regrets people will have are the things they don't even try versus the things they try and fail. Mm. And nobody ever remembers your second best. Nobody remembers your second best. Like, for example, you know, when I built up an online community that grew to 300,000 members and I sold that for millions, that's the number one thing people remember because I had a really large audience in that. But my second best was a very similar business, same business model. It just was focused on trucks instead of cars. That second best effort grew to 280,000 registered members, had the same revenue, same value. But nobody even knows about my second best, even though my first best wasn't a whole lot bigger than my second best. See what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then I've started other companies, grew to seven figures, but I've started nine companies. Three of them did really well, but six of them didn't do very well. And nobody even knows about those. Even though like people that were in the space saw them going on, they saw that they came and they went.
Right.
They quickly forget about that, just like you do. And, you know, I was actually, you know, someone was asking me about success at a meeting a week ago and they're in the car scene. I was like, have you ever heard of this website? And they're like, no. Said, have you ever heard of this website? And they said, no. I said, have you ever heard of this business? They said, no. And I was like, those were all three that I started that didn't do very well.
Wow.
And they were kind of like, huh. And I like to use a sports analogy on this one because it's perfect for this, is that, you know, the Hall of Fame, Major League Baseball, Hall of Fame batters, like the best batters have ever played the game, their average on base is 30%.
Hmm.
30%. And they are the best batters in history. And they're in the archives and they're at the Hall of Fame, 30%. So you got to realize that 7 out of 10 times they stepped up to the plate, they weren't going to get to first base. Mm. And you realize like, wow, that's pretty, it sounds really low, but yeah, that's the best of the best. So don't be really hard on yourself and expect that the first thing that you start is the grand slam that puts you in the Hall of Fame. It just doesn't work that way. You have to realize that every time you fail, you're going to learn something. And hopefully you don't make that mistake twice because you're there to learn or you're there to win. There's only two scenarios and you're going to improve. And most people think that they need to have all this information as an entrepreneur before they start. Okay. Right. Guys, I didn't think that I was going to be a multimillionaire. That was not my, even my plan for starting the business I started. I just thought about, hey, you know what? I want to build a place on the internet where my car friends can hang out and talk about cars and talk about racing cars. That's all I want to do. I could make a cool hangout. And within a few months, it was making thousands and thousands of dollars per month. And I was like, oh crap. this is like a business more than a hobby. This is a business. And it wasn't even until then, it's probably almost a year in. It's like, I think we need to go make one of those LLCs or something. Like, I didn't even know what it was. I keep hearing like, you should go make an LLC and you should have a separate bank account. And it's like, oh crap. See, but I illustrate this because I didn't have all the answers in business, but I started and it grew and I became a better and better entrepreneur as I went. And unfortunately, I find a lot of people out there that will read 100 books, go to 10,000 business conferences, listen to podcasts like mine and yours, and just consume, consume, consume. And they take notes. They got stacks of notebooks from all the things they've done and the books they've read. And there, you go look at the shelf, like you and I have bookshelves, and you look through the books and they're highlighting every single page and making notes. And I'm, okay, which business did you start? Well, you know, I'm still planning. Planning for what?
Yeah.
Go create a checking account. You could do that today. Bank open. Yeah. Go create a checking account. Put in a business checking account. Or step one, how do I get paid now? Go create a Stripe account or a PayPal account. That literally takes you 5 minutes right now. You could probably do it on your phone if you're listening to this. Yeah. That's how you get paid. Okay. Go create a business name. Go create a logo. Go to Fiverr.com. Spend $30 instead of five and hire someone to make you a logo. There's your name. Like, you can do all these little things in 1 week. You could actually have a business, even though you're not making any money yet. You could have the business ready for you. And then you can learn while you're trying to make money and you can get more confidence. You can improve and improve and improve. And you're going to learn. You're going to get punched in the face. You're going to lose money. That business may go out of business, but you're going to keep learning. And the biggest thing there is you just got to start. Quit making excuses. Quit being in consumption mode and be in creative mode.
Oh, I love that so much because I feel like that in Clubhouse, like everyone's so busy being in there, going to the rooms, listening, asking questions. And I'm like, guys, you're on here so much. Like, when are you putting it into action? Like, I don't know when you're actually going to utilize what you're learning. It's beautiful. I'm glad you're learning. But at the end of the day, you got to turn that off and actually like sit in front of your paper or your computer. And guess what? It's 2021. Like everything is really, really simple to do. And it's so fast to be able to figure it out. I mean, between me and you, okay, guys, I YouTube everything. I'm like, where do I go for a podcast? Anchor? Okay, done. And I think that part of that is natural personality. And another part is from our upbringing. So, you know, for me, it was very similar to how you described. Like, I didn't really have time to be like, do I want to go skiing or like, you know, whatever today? No, I was like, Betty, you better get stuff done because like things got to get happening, you know? So, which is a whole nother conversation and we'll chat about that later. But, you know, it's fascinating to see. And I just get so excited because you really, from a perspective of where you're at now, to be able to say that, guys, at the end of the day, you don't have to have the 100 grandiose plan in place, ready to go before you do a single thing. Step out of your fear, take a chance, take a risk. Of course, be smart about it. But at the end of the day, just know that when you want to create an idea or a business, whatever that might be, there are resources out there for you. And just be brave. Just go ahead and start, right? Yeah.
I love that you brought up the people that hang out on Clubhouse too much. And you're thinking like, what kind of successful business do they really run if they're always there? Like, you and I are not exaggerating. There are some people that are there like 12 hours a day. They're there 12 hours a day. And here's another thing that's a red flag to me. I'm a millionaire. I got a lot of friends that are millionaires. None of my legitimate millionaire friends hang out on an app all day asking other people for money. Oh. Hey, if you DM me this, I'll send you this. And hey, if you join this, I'll do like, no, like if you have money, why are you always asking people for money? And the funny thing is that I get interviewed and I've got a TV deal coming from Clubhouse. And the main feedback that my clients give me is like, I've never heard you pitch. It's like, I just teach people things. I give them information. If they decide they want to work with me, they will Google me. They will find out what I do. They will ask themselves, is this something that I would like to do with him or not? Or should I refer some business to this person? I don't have to pitch. I'm not going to be the person that's like, DM me Tony Rules at hashtag 365 driven is awesome. And I will send you my top 10 list for this. And I'm thinking to myself like, dude, I don't know any real successful people that do that like over and over and over, especially on an app where they have to use their own voice. Like they would have a VA or a salesperson doing that for them versus them doing it themselves. So there's a lot of weird BS red flag stuff to me. And you know, if I can't Google you and actually go see what your lifestyle looks like, I don't know if I believe what you say on apps and social media. You know, because a lot of people talk big. And here's another weird thing about the entrepreneurs and Clubhouse, because this is a good rant. You and I enjoy this.
Do it.
They don't ever mention the names of their company, right? So that's like asking, hey, Betty, what is the name of your child?
Adina Maya.
You know your child's name and you're proud of that. And you're like, oh, I love this. Your business is the same way. People ask me, I was like, LS1 Tech, PerformanceTrucks.net, Deviate Motoring, 365 Drip. I can name all the companies I started and I'm proud of them, even when they failed. But some of these people don't put it in their profile. They don't even mention it. It's like, did you really even start a company? Like, did you inherit that money? Let's be real, right? Oh. So people who start things, start brands, are pretty proud of their brands and are willing to say the names of those brands.
Yeah, I'm trying not to go on the whole thing about it, but I love it. I think it's hilarious. And I actually really appreciate it. It's refreshing because there was many points where I'm on that app and I'm just wondering, like, am I the only one? Like, what's happening? You know, is this what? Am I the only sane one here? But, you know, not to put down whatever it is. There's many amazing things there. And obviously we met. So, hey, you know, I think that when you put
yourself. There's good and there's bad.
Yeah, like anything. So if you put yourself out there in the right place, in the right frame of mind, and you get to a place where you realize what you can and can't do, et cetera, then good things will come. But either way, I think that's hilarious. I also thought the same thing about the millionaire clubs and all that stuff, because I'm like, either one, they have so much money and they're just bored and they have nothing else to do, which is cool. That's freaking amazing. Great. Or like, you still need more money, which is, why are you saying you're a millionaire, but you need more money? Whatever. Anyways, I just find it interesting.
It is weird. Your BS sensors should listen to that sometimes. Right?
Yeah. And just to make a learning lesson for this is that really, guys, and anybody in any field, in any conversation, et cetera, be smart, use your intuition, you know, ask questions. Don't just take the first person who smiles at you or who tells you that you're amazing and then sign up for that. Because all too often we've heard this story where they have no money and they put whatever it is, thousands of dollars into these people to help them and guide them. And lo and behold, they don't really. And that's the scary thing. So don't be so, I guess, naive.
Yeah, that goes for all media, even New York Times bestselling authors. I'm serious. Like, there's been times I read a good book. I was like, man, this book was really good. Let me go Google them and see what they've achieved before this book came out. And it's like nothing. Like they were a middle manager at some cubicle farm that did nothing. They wrote a book, it blew up. And then all of a sudden they're the expert in this. Like they'd never even operate at that level. So even at that level, you still have to question things. So go do your due diligence, go do your research, ask questions. Formulate if it's real or not, and then just make the action accordingly.
I love it. Tony, I have to ask you, because as you know, this is my jam, but what does confidence mean to you?
Wow. I think confidence is knowing that you can make the bold claims, but also deliver on those promises. And for most people, they like to make bold claims, but they don't deliver the results. Therefore, it's fake confidence or it's not real confidence. So certainty, I think when you can be certain, people enjoy that. I think that a lot of times leadership and the lessons I've learned from the greatest leaders, they were the ones that were decisive. You know, confidence is making a decision and rolling with it, understanding that no decision is final. It just leads to further decisions. So it's okay to be certain based on your knowledge, your experience, the data, things that you understand. Make a decision, quit being hesitant, quit thinking about, oh, let's reschedule this for another meeting to make a decision about this other decision. Like, make a decision based on what you know today. Go down that road. If something changes or there's new revelation, new discovery, new data, you just have a different decision to make at that point. So quit getting caught up on the decisions. Just be more confident, be more certain in all walks of life, and people actually will gravitate towards you a lot faster.
Wow. I love that. Thank you so much, Tony, for all of your insight, your time, your energy. And I mean, guys, you have to check out his book, his podcast, 365 Driven, and of course, find him on social. I'll put all the info in the bio. Tony, thank you for coming.
Hey, Betty, it was an honor to be on your show, and I'd really like to connect with you. It's fun getting to know you.
Yeah, we're going to chat more after. Don't worry. Thank you so much for spending your time with me today on Chat with Betty, the podcast. I am your host, Betty, your glow up bestie. And I am just so grateful that you took the time out to listen to me and our guests. They are all incredible, sharing such valuable inspiration, tips, and techniques on how to be our best self. Please remember to subscribe, follow, and share your review. Cannot wait to see you next time. Bye.